You can listen to Issues Etc. live and on demand with the new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. You can get these apps at our website, issuesetc.org. Give us a call, send us an email, or follow us on Facebook or Twitter. Issues Etc. in the palm of your hand. The new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. Download today at issuesetc.org. There's an app for that.
Well, at the end of this year, I'll have been 10 years in post as Archbishop and just over 20 years as a bishop. So that's part of it, feeling that after 10 years, it's proper to pray and reflect and review your options. And also, I think this year, a number of watersheds which seem to make this a reasonable moment to, at least to think about moving on. And when a possibility arrived that looked credible and attractive, then it seemed right to think about it. It's a job of immense demands, and I would hope that my successor has the constitution of an ox and the skin of a rhinoceros, really.
That's Archbishop of Canterbury, Rowan Williams. He will not be Archbishop for long. He has recently announced that his resignation from that position is right on the horizon. There's some of his explanation for why he's decided to move on to other things. What does it mean to be the Archbishop of Canterbury, and what of his successor? Joining us to talk about the resignation of Archbishop of Canterbury, Rowan Williams, Bishop Keith Ackerman. He's a retired bishop for the Episcopal Church Diocese of Quincy, Illinois, and president of a reform group in the Anglican Church called Forward in Faith. Bishop Ackerman, welcome back.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be on with you again today, and I pray that you're having a good Lent.
He has served for a decade as Archbishop of Canterbury. What do you think the legacy of Rowan Williams will be?
Well, I think that's an extraordinarily important question, because in many ways, as we look at his predecessors in office, and of course we recognize that he has well over 100 of them, that he will be noted as being one of the intellectual archbishops of Canterbury. That is to say that if we look at the 100th Archbishop of Canterbury, Bishop Arthur Michael Ramsay, for example, he will be remembered for some of his remarkable writings. I think it'll be true that in the future we will be looking at some of the writings of the Archbishop of Canterbury, Rowan Williams, as being very critical and significant during this time.
He's probably most well-known to most people because of the recent royal wedding where he presided there. But what does the Archbishop of Canterbury do in the Anglican Communion?
Well, again, that's really significant. In fact, I find it much easier to answer the question, what church are you in, by saying, did you watch a royal wedding? And then suddenly people say, oh, I get it. Yes, well, the Archbishop of Canterbury has an extraordinary responsibility. He functions as what we call primus inter pares, which means first among equals, meaning that as the Archbishop of Canterbury, he has several roles. One, he presides over international gatherings of all Anglican bishops. But he also, by virtue of being in the Church of England, presides over General Synod, Church of England, and he also is senior bishop of the country by virtue of office, with the second one being the Archbishop of York. And so he has to preside over a number of state affairs, state issues, because of the Church of England being a state church. But he also is the spiritual leader of Anglicans throughout the world.
And it's often a comparison, but it's not an incredibly apt one, and that with the Roman Catholic pontiff. How would you describe contrast the difference there?
Well, again, a good question, because as we recognize, when we're speaking in public, oftentimes people can only understand concepts by comparisons. And I understand why that might be the way of being able to explain that. When I'm among those of Reformed tradition, I have a little more difficulty coming up with some concepts because of the fact that there isn't anything quite like it in Reformed churches. So here's the best way to look at it, I think, is that if we would look at the role of bishops and patriarchs in the early days of the church, where they function in what we call a conciliar fashion, we might get a better idea. That is to say, the concept of ecclesiology and authority in Anglicanism has functioned in the conciliar fashion, not so much the confessional nor the magisterial, and that makes it a bit more consonant with Eastern Orthodoxy in terms of its ecclesiology.
How would you characterize Rowan Williams? I mean, my first word that comes to my mind is conservative, not politically or even theologically, but in his approach to what was during his 10 years probably some of the most fractious times in Anglicanism, especially with respect to that upstart province, the Episcopal Church USA.
Indeed, and I must say that I have watched his eyebrows move on more than one occasion when the name Episcopal Church was mentioned, because he was immediately thrust into that conflict. So in order to answer your question, let me just say this. On a personal level, he's an extraordinarily warm and friendly person. Keep in mind, he's not an Englishman. He's a Welshman. And so that means that he's in a very peculiar position, having to be the primate of the Church of England, when in fact he was from the Church in Wales. And there's a big difference. The Church of England is the Church of England, whereas in Wales it is one of the churches. He's been brought up with a bit of an independent spirit. There was a little bit of an independent spirit among the Welshmen, and especially as they relate to the English. So not all the English were absolutely on the edge of their seat about an introverted, intellectual Welshman becoming the Archbishop of Canterbury. But I think overall, many people have been warm to him. He is, as you've said, conservative, certainly in one sense. Conservative inasmuch as he's dealing with such a fractious and diverse group of people. On a very personal level, part of the issue is this. He really likes to analyze everything conceptually, and I think he learned early on that a public leader can't think out loud as much when he is speaking as he can do in the classroom.
So let's talk about that problem of the Episcopal Church USA. You, of course, have personal and intimate knowledge of this. And why do you think it was that Rowan Williams' eyebrows fluctuated, being, as you say, thrust into the midst of that controversy?
Because of the fact that his upbringing would lead him to understand that Anglicanism is a worldwide communion, he has never understood why an individual province would begin to function as if it were an independent denomination. And so it has taken him a while just to figure out why in the world leadership in the Episcopal Church had determined that it would function in an unprecedented fashion without working closely with the rest of the Anglican Communion. It put him in a very, very awkward position because the presiding bishop before the current one, Frank Tracy Griswold, and he are very close friends, both of them enjoying intellectual endeavors and wanting very much always to be in conversation about theology. They love to talk theology. And that's part of the problem, is that a great deal of what has been put forward by the Episcopal Church lacks any semblance to theological reasoning. And so for Archbishop Rowan Williams to raise his eyebrows is, in effect, the archbishop saying, I don't speak your language. He speaks theology as a primary language, not sociology.
And the Episcopal Church USA is operating from a sociological basis rather than theological.
It starts with a sociological principle. And then what it does, it attempts to be able to find a theological touch point and a biblical touch point. Whereas classically, of course, theology has been grounded in Scripture and reinforced in tradition with a notion of experience. But the reality here, and I would rather say reason, but here what we're really dealing with is an archbishop who understands classic Anglicanism, and he's had to interact with people who did not understand classic Anglicanism, but understand well, as I used to like to say in the House of Bishops, choose this day. Is it going to be Saul of Tarsus or Saul Alinsky?
One of the things I've been impressed with Rowan Williams is his restraint, because he was quite clear from the beginning, especially after the Episcopal Church USA decided on its own to consecrate the first openly gay bishop, Gene Robinson, New Hampshire. Rowan Williams did not theologically oppose the elevation of an actively homosexual bishop in principle, but he did not support their move. Why not?
I think there are a couple of reasons. You may also note that a friend of his, Geoffrey John, in the Church of England, had similarly been considered for a bishopric in the Church of England, and eventually the Archbishop withdrew the recommendation. It's because Archbishop Rowan really sees church unity as extraordinarily important. Even if it may be a bit different from his own perspective. For example, he would, in one sense, theologically, be supportive of the ordination of women to the priesthood and to the episcopate. On the other hand, it is he who continues to offer ways for the family to stay together. It is he who insisted in the Church of in Wales that there be a, what we call PAB there, but that it be a provincial area bishop who administered to those parishes that could not accept the ordination of women. And in the Church of England, he insisted, even recently, that young bishops be appointed to be the flying bishops, or the PEVs, the provincial Episcopal vicars. What that means is...
Well, let's take a break, and we'll get back to what that means on the other side of the break. Our guest, Bishop Keith Ackerman, is a retired bishop of the Episcopal Church Diocese of Quincy, Illinois, president of a reform group in the Anglican Church called Forward in Faith.
Did you know that you can listen to Issues Etc. 24/7? Check out our website, issuesetc.org, and go to the Listen On Demand page. Listen at the gym, in your kitchen, in your garden, on your iPod, your computer, or in your car. The technology may be new, but the truth never changes. Issues Etc. On Demand audio, available for your convenience at issuesetc.org. 10 hours of new programming each week. issuesetc.org, and click Listen On Demand.
We've got nothing against bumper stickers, just bumper sticker theology, and we'd like to send you an Issues Etc. bumper sticker. You'll find the Issues Etc. logo, slogan, and website address. Simply send your request to Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Please include a self-addressed stamped envelope. Good theology doesn't fit on a bumper sticker, but you can tell people where to find good theology, the Issues Etc. bumper or window sticker.
Have you heard of the CLCC? In Hosea 4, we see, "My people are destroyed by lack of knowledge." The Confessional Lutherans for Christ Commission can help educate Lutherans on being Lutheran. We treasure our Lutheran beliefs and think that all Lutherans would if they learn what we believe, teach, and confess. So visit our website, www.theclcc.org. Check out what we have to offer. Get on our mailing list, or better yet, join us. And maybe encourage your pastor to hold a seminar in your area. Just go to theclcc.org.
Here are two new ways to stay connected to Issues Etc., Facebook and Twitter. You'll find photos of in-studio guests at facebook.com/issuesetc, and you'll find a list of upcoming topics and guests on Twitter at issuesetc. Social networking for the thinking Christian, facebook.com/issuesetc, and on Twitter at issuesetc. Connect with fellow Issues Etc. junkies today, facebook.com/issuesetc, and on Twitter at issuesetc.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Victory in New Jersey.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
If you are a pro-life medical professional, should you be compelled to participate in an abortion procedure? According to officials at the University of Medicine and Dentistry of New Jersey, the answer was yes. They informed nurses and others that they could not be exempted from helping with abortion procedures because of their personal views. However, 12 pro-life nurses employed by the hospital filed suit. The hospital then reversed the policy after the case went to federal court. We're glad to report that the nurses are back at work and are exempt from participating in abortion procedures.
Are you pro-life? Then visit our website at sba-list.org and discover how you can make a difference. I'm Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. Thanks for taking a stand.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking with Bishop Keith Ackerman about the resignation, eminent resignation of the Archbishop of Canterbury, Rowan Williams. You'll find a link to Forward in Faith. Bishop Ackerman is president of this reform group in the Anglican Church called Forward in Faith at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Bishop Ackerman, you were talking before the break about some actions that the Archbishop had taken over some controversial issues in the Anglican Communion. What do those actions tell you about the Archbishop's disposition there?
It tells me that he wishes to be, and I hate using this term, but I'll back away from it in a moment, that he really wants to be inclusive in the best sense of the word. That is to say, that he really does not want anyone to leave the Anglican Communion. He wants to hold the Anglican Communion together. And so he's done everything he can and has been, in many ways, a spokesman for the traditionalist voice, even though in his own legislations from time to time, he has not reflected the traditionalist position. He always is fighting for a place for traditionalists.
How is the successor to Rowan Williams chosen, and who, or not who, what kind of a person do you think will be his successor? About a minute here.
Sure. Well, it's not been uncommon for the Archbishop of York to become the Archbishop of Canterbury. In fact, that is a usual set of circumstances. The last two, on the other hand, have been chosen in a little different fashion. And so there will be a great deal of speculation. The last time, it was the Bishop of London, it was the Bishop of Rochester, and then the Archbishop of Wales, and we know the Archbishop of Wales became the Archbishop of Canterbury. This time it would be very intriguing because Bishop Sentamu, who is the Archbishop of York, is actually an African, first African Archbishop in the Church of England. And it will be very interesting to see if that might be followed. That name will be given to the Crown's Appointment Committee. It's a little different than it used to be. It used to be just the Queen and the Prime Minister, but now it will involve a Crown Appointments Committee. Several names will be looked at by the Crown Appointments Committee, submitted to the Queen, and the Queen will confer with the Prime Minister.
One more quick question. Bishop Catherine Jefford Shorey, the presiding bishop of the Episcopal Church USA, has kind of fashioned herself as the leader of worldwide Episcopalianism. What would she want in the next Archbishop of Canterbury?
Someone who would do anything the Episcopal Church would like it to do.
Which would be?
A full-speed, leftward agenda.
Would she like to see a woman there, perhaps an openly gay person there at some point?
She would understand pragmatically that that would not be possible at this time. Ironically, at this very moment, women who are bishops in the Anglican Communion in the very few provinces that do have them are not allowed to function in the Church of England. They're not allowed to do any sacramental act. They may not do baptisms or confirmations because of the fact that it is a parliamentary church.
With 30 seconds, will the next Archbishop of Canterbury face the same problems of Anglican unity?
I think probably it could very well escalate. And the reason I think it'll escalate is because we are now beginning to see phenomenal growth in the global south to such an extent that it greatly outnumbers what we used to think of as the Anglican Church.
Bishop Keith Ackerman is retired bishop of the Episcopal Church Diocese of Quincy, Illinois, and president of a reform group in the Anglican Church called Forward in Faith. Bishop Ackerman, thank you very much for being our guest.
It's always a pleasure, and God bless all of the precious people who are listening in. Have a wonderful Lent and Easter.